The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
On the beat, ho, Debo, any rap. He a freak, though, man down. Call like Amber Lambs, tell him breathe, bro. Nella to the cross, he walk around like Tizo. What's up with these? Trying to see Compton. The industry can hate me. Fuck them all and they mama. How many ops you really got? I mean, it's too many options. I'm finna pass.
Good morning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It's Wednesday, the 4th of June, 2025, and you are on the clock with Aaron Green. Now, I enjoy being an older person. I ain't an old person yet, but I enjoy being an older person. I saw one video yesterday where a very young girl was explaining to another younger girl that 25 is not old. And 23 is not going on 30. And it made me realize that perhaps we need a little spatial awareness in this country so we could understand where we're located and how we are situated next to other people. We need a lot of spatial awareness in this town. It appears as if the politicians may need the lion's share of what is available. Anyway, that song, They Not Like Us by Kendrick Lamar, I had promised myself I would not play that song unless it was absolutely appropriate. And I think today that song is appropriate. We're talking labor. We're talking Labor Day Parade, little, I guess, political history. We're touching on what's in the news. And I've got some excerpts from some local books that I want to read from today as a part of our walk to Labor Day on Friday, June 6th. Of course, Labor Day is now a public holiday, and it's designated the first Friday in June. So today I'm going to be reading excerpts from three books. One is Towards a Democratic Franchise, Suffrage Reform in the 20th Century Bahamas by Stephen Ariner. The second book is A New History of the Bahamas by Jim Lawler. And the third book is The Revelations of a Living Legend, the memoirs of Dr. Errington Washington Isaac Watkins Sr. And I found some excerpts in there that I think would be interesting as we prepare for Labor Day. See, just like the Pride Parade across the globe, there's great tension about what the parade should be. Should it be a celebration, a party? Even if it is a celebration, should we all get loose? Is it a moment of commemoration? Is it a serious moment? Is it a light moment? Has the parade been constructed in a way that people can join in and participate in the way that they want? If you come for a celebration, you could celebrate. If you come for a more solemn recognition of the importance of Labor Day, you get that as well. So we're going to be talking what's in the news and these excerpts. To start the show, let me remind you about the Guardian Media Group and Crew's giveaway. Guardian Media Group and Going Places Travel want to take you on a 7-day cruise for four to Panama, Colombia, Curacao, and Aruba on Royal Caribbean's Serenade of the Seas. And here's the best part, no visa required. That's right, no visa required. You have four ways to enter, four ways to win. One, fill out the form in the Nassau Guardian. Two, listen to Star 106.5 FM and Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Three, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Four, make a purchase at Going Places Travel. Entry deadline is June 27th, 2025, draw 25. So pack your bags, get ready to soak up the sun, and feel that ocean breeze. You and three loved ones sailing the high seas on a vacation cruise of a lifetime. Brought to you by the Guardian Media Group and Going Places Travel. Certain conditions apply, airfare, taxes, and gratuities not included. Because of the theme of the show, I want to remind you guys of the Loyalist Charles Farquharson Will Competition, open to junior and senior high school students across the archipelago. To win the prize, you must provide the government recording record for Loyalist Charles Farquharson's will and the recorded date of Loyalist Charles Farquharson's death. Call the show. Let us know you want to play the game. Submit the question, the answers, the name of the student you're answering for, because students are in school right now, the school, the grade, and the answers. Contact information, and we will get back to you. All right, before we get into the show, one more note. Tonight at National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, Equality Bahamas is hosting another Women's Wednesdays, and it is a session for the Feminist Standards for Governance program. This evening, they'll be focusing on health and education. In this project, Equality Bahamas is creating a framework for those who are interested in developing standards for governance. Tonight, 6 p.m., NAGB, Equality Bahamas Women's Wednesdays. Now, it's a Wednesday. Wednesday's the day where we join the two shows. I've asked Mr. Newry to come join me this morning because I got a bit of history, and Mr. Newry is really the history man, so I wanted to make sure he was here with me. Now, don't mind. I see the articles in the paper. We're going to get to this one at least, PFOIA play. PM FOIA implementation will not significantly increase government transparency. Davis dismisses criticism of PLP's Labor Day campaign launch plan. Here's another headline, Officer's Father. I'm going to seek justice for my son. I think another important story for us to follow. Morning, Mr. Newry.
Good morning this morning. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How you doing?
I'm always good, man.
All right, so I found some excerpts. I was looking, I had two sort of keywords, riot and labor. Mm-hmm. And so I started with towards a democratic franchise, suffrage reform in the 20th century Bahamas. But to be honest with you, when I got in there, there were so many other nuggets of note, I felt like I needed to share plenty of them, that, you know, people would be interested, right? So here's an excerpt from the book that gives us a sense of what the political landscape looked like, I'm going to say immediately, prior, in that sort of 20-year period prior to independence, right? And we're going to start on page 110 of Towards a Democratic Franchise, Suffrage Reform in the 20th Century Bahamas. The so-called PLP had been founded in 1953. To date, it is the oldest Bahamian political party still in existence. Its platform for the 1956 election contained but 2 points on matters of electoral reform. It demanded universal suffrage and proportional representation. After the election and its sobering outcome, demands for, quote, a reduction in life of the House of Assembly, close quotes, and a revision of constituencies and their boundaries, quote, representation, close quotes, were added to the PLP's agenda. The PLP remained vague on all of these points, and it was still silent on the issue of the company vote. There were many allegations of corruption made during the election. However, it would take more than political scandal to mobilize the Bahamian masses to demand reform. The colonial office recognized this. I'm going to stick a pin there. Mr. Newry, mm-hmm. You heard that part? It said there were many allegations of corruption made during the election. However, it would take more than political scandal to mobilize the Bahamian masses to demand reform. So this is in that period, 1953 to 1956. And what I find interesting is I think you could put that label on the Bahamas today, mm-hmm. right? It's going to take more than political scandal for Bahamian masses to demand reform. And my question is this: is it because political parties have done all the mobilizing? Like, it's the political party, like from this period, post-42 riot, was that the 57 riot, right? In that period there, is it fair to say that it would have been difficult to organize the masses because the masses were being organized through political lenses? So if the political party that you affiliated with wasn't prepared to protest, then the average person could not necessarily organize a protest on their own. I just thought that sentence right there, it would take more than political scandal to mobilize the Bahamian masses to demand reform.
It's actually a critique about the cultural nuance of the Bahamas at the time.
Yeah.
We were living under trunk system, right? Subsistence system. Mm-hmm. Where individuals were dependent upon the establishment to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So if there was a scandal by the establishment, if you unemployed the establishment, that means you unemployed yourself. So it had to take more than a scandal to force a self-suicide or self-inflicting mm-hmm. wound. So I think that was a critique on that the people would tolerate anything in order to survive.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And it raised a point for me. I think it's important for us in 2025 to remember that it's possible that the entity that is the PLP in 2025 is not the same entity that was the PLP in 1953, mm-hmm. in 1956, right? They are different entities now. I'm going to continue reading from that article. The Colonial Office recognizes this. Economically, the colony has never been more prosperous, and this prosperity affects almost everyone. Mm-hmm. For this reason, political discontent, even when periodically exacerbated, tends not to be maintained.
Mm.
I think it's the same thing here.
And one must also remember that
up
into 1983, the Bahamas was ranked in the top 10, top 20 in terms of the world's richest countries.
Yeah.
Mind you, the money didn't trickle down to the average Bahamian. But in terms of prosperity of the Bahamas, we were ranked as one of the richest countries in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no need to protest
when you get money.
Yeah.
So we're going to continue. It's going to get better. There are, however, deficiencies in the field of labor relations, electoral procedure, and race relations, mm-hmm. right? Which the people at present in power in the Bahamas have done little to quell. The election outcome did not significantly change the composition of the House of Assembly. The PLP won 6 of the 29 seats, but its leader, Henry Milton Taylor, was unsuccessful in his bid for one of the 2 Long Island seats.
Mm-hmm.
A second party, the so-called Bahamas Democratic League, founded in 1955, won 1 seat. With its leader, Etienne Depuche, editor of the Tribune newspaper, won his race for the Crooked Island, Long Key, and Ackland seat.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of the remaining seats went to nominally independent candidates associated with Bay Street, who had not yet formed a political party and were at the time characterized as, quote, right-wingers, close quotes, by the governor and the Colonial Office. The arrival of party politics meant that, with time, the opposition to Bay Street's parliamentary majority became more systematically organized. Therefore, shortly after the general election, Stafford Sands, who recognized the futures, began to organize the parliamentary majority of Bay Street Boys into a political party, too.
Mm-hmm.
And a so-called Christian Democratic Party was born.
Mm-hmm.
The Colonial Office took umbrage not only with the name, but also with the fact that the party's members, who in 1956 had presented themselves to voters as professed independents, had now transformed into a political party complete with a party platform.
Mm-hmm.
We can stick a pin there and go back to that.
Do you notice that was the United Bahamian Party's first name was?
Yeah, it was the Christian Democratic Party.
And you noticed the concern that you went into politics as an independent, and all of a sudden you want to change.
That's why I tell you stick a, that's why I tell you stick a pin. I wanted to say.
I know an MP like that now.
I wanted to say, look at the press in the past. I guess that's why. Maybe that's why they say history will repeat itself if you don't pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can read that part again. But also with the fact that the party's members, who in 1956 had presented themselves to voters as professed independents and had now transformed into a political party complete with a party platform and took the same to the House of Assembly without having been given a mandate to do so by the electorate. They had been elected without being part of a party slate of candidates, without promoting a joint platform. The first issue was resolved the following year when the party renamed itself the United Bahamian Party, the UBP. For the second issue, there was no practical solution. Okay, here we go. The balance of power, the parliamentary majority was now organized as the UBP. Mm-hmm. Before that moment when they were organized into a party, they were individual independent candidates that each were part of the minority.
Mm-hmm.
But once Stafford Sands organized them into a party, they had the majority
mm-hmm.
in the House. The balance of power within the opposition, however, was not as clear as its election results suggested. Before one party could demonstrate longevity and repeated and increasing electoral successes, the opposition, comprised of two parties, ran the risk of appearing divided. This was especially true as the smaller opposition party, which eventually faltered, the BDL, controlled the Tribune newspaper, an important public stage and more influential than the PLP's Nassau Herald. At the time, the Bahamas' other influential paper was the Nassau Guardian. Founded in 1844, it was the colony's oldest newspaper, still in existence. This era served as the mouthpiece for Bay Street and the UBP. Now we're going to get into the 1942 riots a bit. The issue of property qualifications, plural voting, and the company vote erupted again over an economic conflict in 1958. The 1942 riots that had marked for the colonial office the point of no return in their support for the secret ballot had erupted over a labor dispute about the wages paid on the so-called project, part of which was the construction of a military airfield in western New Providence, Windsor Field. In the post-war years, tourism, and with it, air traffic increased and Nassau's Old Oaks Field Airport was deemed inadequate. In 1957, therefore, the government decided to relocate operations to Windsor Field. Oaks Field was less than 2 miles from Nassau, but Windsor Field was more than 9 miles away. Bahamian taxicab drivers, who were overwhelmingly self-employed, imagined that prosperous times were ahead, indeed, as they were looking forward to significantly higher fares. Dashing the taxicab drivers' hopes, however, the hotels cut a deal with a Bay Street-owned tour company for the exclusive bus and limousine transfer of their guests to and from the airport.
We stick a pin there.
Yeah, yeah.
We have had tour operators, private entities, complain about the same thing now, where there are hotel operations who are now cutting deals with private tour companies, where taxi drivers aren't getting any fares.
Right, they're getting cut out. Another situation that's just
repeating itself.
Repeating itself. Dashing the taxi cab drivers' hopes, however, the hotels cut a deal with a Bay Street-owned tour company for the exclusive bus and limousine transfer of their guests to and from the airport. This caused considerable unrest amongst the taxi cab drivers. The new airport's opening date ended by protests organized by the Bahamas Taxicab Union. 2 months later, a compromise still had not been reached. The Bahamas Federation of Labor, in support of the BTCU, that's the Taxicab Union, called for a general strike and boycott of white-owned businesses to begin on Monday, January 13, 1958. The final decision had only been reached the night before, and the regular union members were not informed before 8:30 a.m. I just wanted to stick a pin.
Yes.
Because we talk about those sort of dynamics as well currently in 2025.
Yes. But also, there is no umbrella union that has that type of strength that can call a general strike.
Not anymore.
They've been trying for a while. Historically, they've been trying again and again and again. It's always interrupted. They don't have the strength. But I would like to also say, since we're reading about this,
yeah,
you mentioned the taxi union.
Yeah.
Have you seen their headquarters? It's dilapidated. The taxi union is dilapidated. Have you seen the House of Labor?
Mm-hmm.
The headquarters for the TUC?
Mm-hmm.
It's dilapidated. Right? I would even go as far as the hotel union. It's not dilapidated, of course, but it's weathered.
Mm-hmm.
It's weathered. And I want to question the state of union, or state of the union in the Bahamas, especially in this time when there are private contracts to be given out to other non-unionized entities. Say, how can the union compromise, or how can they deal with these situations?
Mm-hmm.
It's telling a tale about union in the Bahamas in general.
Absolutely. Okay, I'm going to continue. I'm just going to finish off that excerpt. Again, to take a more active role in Bahamian affairs. Okay, here we go. The final decision had only been reached the night before, and regular union members were not informed before 8:30 a.m. on the day of the strike, but word spread rapidly, and later the same morning, most hotels were closed, and most utility workers and many private sector employees had walked off their jobs. The strike continued until January 29th, 1958. So now I want to read quickly, well, what I wanted to ask for, Mr. Nuri, if anybody was alive during that time, and you remember being a part of this movement. You remember being a part of the strike. You remember your Grammy or your grandmother telling you stories from that time. Call us and talk to us about it. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, 242-300-5720. That's 242-300-5720. See, because we can't have a proper conversation about who the Labor Day Parade belongs to until we understand the dynamics that led to the creation of a Labor Day parade.
And then we own history. They allow other people to write down their history.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a big
issue.
They
let things happen to them.
That's a big issue as well. So I was gifted a copy of Dr. Errington Washington Isaac Watkins Sr.'s memoirs.
Mm-hmm.
That's the boy they call the white boy.
Mm-hmm.
He's writing the punch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's senior man to me. He would have been in set with my grandfather, right? Like, I think he's in between my grandfather and my father.
Okay.
Yeah. Senior man. I met him once, and the first thing he asked me is, how's my Grammy?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, that's how I know he's a politician,
mm-hmm.
right? Chapter 16, The Strikes of 1957. 1958. I'm just going to read a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The great labor stoppage of 1957-58 saw BEC, Batelco, the taxi cab union, all hotels in the country, and garbage collections totally shut down. Things got so bad that the British Army had to be called in to supply electrical generating personnel to keep Bahamas Electricity Corporation operational. The international airport, which had just recently been opened, was completely shut down. I, Bumpy Watkins, was involved in an incident at the airport on the first day of the strike, which, because of how I handled the situation, the Colonial Office in London gave me a glowing commendation. The taxicab union, which was headed by Clifford Darling, later Sir Clifford and Gigi, and Wilbert Moss, who some years later was imprisoned while a serving member of parliament for bribery and corruption, they blocked the airport by parking their cars across the entrances to the terminal. This prevented entry to or exit from the airport terminal. The tourist board, headed by Stafford Sands, who was later knighted Sir Stafford Sands, sent Dan Knowles and his fleet of taxis to transport the incoming tourists to town. Dan Knowles' fleet of taxi cabs were not part of the union cabs, which was on strike, and so they were able to work. When the fleet arrived at the airport, the union members realized what was about to happen, so they blocked the entrances to deal with the situation. We realized that the situation was more serious than we had thought it to be. The road was blocked, but to accommodate the commissioner, they moved some of the vehicles to allow us through. All of Knowles' vehicles were on the tarmac by the time the commissioner and I arrived. The commissioner wanted to know if there was another way to exit the tarmac to take the visitors out from the airport. I suggested that if we were to knock out a section of the wall southeast of the hangar, they could drive out, come out onto Coral Harbor Road, then onto Carmichael and Gladstone Roads. Constable number 41 Forbes was on the tarmac with a Land Rover for the purpose of escorting Knowles' taxis back to town. We drove to a point immediately east of the hangar, and using the Land Rover as a battering ram, we demolished a section of the wall. This story, eh? And with the help of Knowles' drivers, we removed the big stones out of the way, giving Knowles' drivers an alternative route to town. About 5 minutes after the last car had left, the union members caught on to what had happened and moved in to block. By this time, all flights in and out of Nassau International Airport had been canceled. On returning to the terminal, we found a number of taxis parked in front of the doors leading to the terminal building. The COP asked the drivers to move their cars, but they ignored him and just stood there silently staring at him. A station wagon owned by a Mr. Brown was at the front of the line with the keys in the ignition. The commissioner instructed me to move the car. I opened the driver's door, and as I put my foot in the car, a group of men descended upon me from all directions. Mr. Brown, the owner, made a football tackle and caught me around the waist. Other drivers were coming at me from all sides. And as I later admitted that I thought they were coming from out of the ground, and the few prayers I could remember, I was repeating them in my head and promising the Lord that if I was on my way out, I was bringing one or two of them with me. I forgot about trying to get in the car at that point, and with my left hand free, I went for Brown's marriage license. That's his particulars. His particulars. Grabbed hold of them.
I massaged them.
And as his right ear was passing my mouth, I took a firm grip on it with my teeth.
Mike Tyson him.
Yeah. I was squeezing and pulling Brown's marriage license with all the strength I could muster and at the same time chewing on his ear. He, Brown, was screaming at the top of his lungs. Quote, turn him loose, turn him loose, he is killing me. And just as they jumped on me, so suddenly they jumped off. When they let me free, I let go of Brown's ear and spat out a mouthful of blood. I gave the marriage license a final yank, which made him scream louder and pushed him away.
He had a strong grip.
And you know, for me, Watkins is a formidable, that's the word, formidable man. Mm. He's a man's man. He looked like the type of man that'd leave the house and come back with half a house. Mm-hmm. So, I just been in the bush building house, tomorrow I can finish it up. Right? But for him to say that he was afraid, mm-hmm. you know, for him to say I was scared, I said my final prayers. And I start acting like an animal because I had to save myself. I think it's important for young officers to understand that you're going to feel afraid on the job. But you need to prepare yourself psychologically for this task that you have volunteered for. He, Brown, immediately went to his knees and started groaning when I got out from under that mob. The only part of my anatomy that was not aching was my eyeballs. As mentioned earlier on, the training was hard. Anatomy was able to absorb lots of punishment. When I got free from that predicament, I observed standing nearby Mr. Spencer Hardy, the new deputy commissioner of police, an Englishman tapping his swagger stick against his leg as if nothing in the world was going on around him. He was very cool, calm, and collected. I'm going to stick a pin right there, Mr. Newry.
Mm-hmm.
I just found it fascinating. You know what we need, Mr. Newry? We need a published list of Bahamian authors. There's so many books out there with so many nuggets of history that need to be collated. They need to be put together.
Maybe a national library?
Yeah, maybe a national library.
For Bahamian
library.
Books?
Yeah, for Bahamian books.
But someone might need to find that important to do.
Yeah.
Until then.
Yeah. I have a third book, again, A New History of the Bahamas by Jim Lawler, and I got an excerpt from there as well. But producer, let's go to a break. When we get back from the break, chapter 11 in A New History of the Bahamas is the Burma Road Riot.
Mm-hmm.
And we just talk a little briefly about the Burma Road Riot, and then we're going to get into some headlines. Maybe I was hoping some people would call. I think it's a fascinating excerpt to look back on history. The numbers to call on the other side of the break, of course, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259-242-300-5720 is toll free for Family Island listeners. That's 242-300-5720. Text line is always powered by BTC 422 GR96 422-4796. 6. You're on the clock with Aaron Green. We'll be right back.
Wait, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing the knife to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Well, he fooled with Joe girl.
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't back down for nothing. So that means you got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you on?
Trying to stay in school, not Simpson Penn. We gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody call me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know, and nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I work?
All you gotta do is call them, or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then you can get the pen from them, and they can claim a reward later using that same pen.
Plus, everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you said.
Calls 308-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
At Cleveland Clinic, care is everything. So when your primary purpose is to care for the world, you'd start with your community until you're accessible anywhere. You make complexities your specialties and put compassion before anything else, all to redefine what's possible for everyone, everywhere, for every care in the world. Cleveland Clinic.
Welcome back to On the Clock with Aaron Green. I got a text here that says, this account of the airport taxi fight has me screaming. But on a serious note, they would rather ram a... It's so unfortunate that certain motives persist today. The creation of the labor movement was done because of the financial disenfranchisement of taxi drivers. And now, instead of serving the people who helped them achieve a national strike, they still chase tourist dollars and leave the people to call Uber. It's more than that. It's more than that, and that's why it's so maddening, right? It's as if, like you say, with no regard to the people who helped them achieve, right? There's a disregard for the rules of the road and other road users. There's a disregard for the laws, the rules and the laws of the road and the police. I mean, the audacity to run a stop sign or a red light in front of the police, knowing that you hold a special license that could be revoked from you at any time. And still y'all behave like that. Now, of course, this is a time when we insert the disclaimer, not all taxi drivers, not all tour and transportation service providers. But unfortunately, the majority of drivers behave as if they've been deputized by the Prime Minister himself to do whatever they feel they need to do in pursuit of tourism and the tourism dollar. And in many instances, they're just disadvantaging Bahamians left, right, and center. All right, Mr. Nuri, just quickly, a new history of the Bahamas, Jim Lawlor. I wanted to get excerpts from all three books in. I'm going to be reading some more excerpts from Mr. Watkins's book. I like it. It's colorful. These are the stories Bahamians want to hear, you know? So chapter 11, A New History of the Bahamas by Jim Lawlor, The Burma Road Riot. Just a little brief read. How did the first of June 1942 protests in the Bahamas get the name Burma Road Riot? The original Burma Road linked Burma, which was then a British colony, with Southwest China, and the British had military forces in both countries to repel the Japanese military during World War II. On the 29th of April 1942, the Japanese advanced along the Burma Road and expelled the British from Burma. Perhaps in the mind of Bahamians, the 1st of June 1942 riot was a symbol of defeating the British authorities and local politicians, and thus became known as the Burma Road Riot. There are two roads in the Bahamas that have been put forward as the metaphorical Burma Road, Blake Road, which at that time was a dirt road connecting West Bay Street to the north shore of Lake Killarney. The other was a road that connected Oaks Field to the construction of Satellite Field, which was renamed Windsor Field, then became the Nassau International Airport, and now the Selinden Pindling Airport. It was then named Interfield Road, which is now the dual carriageway toward the airport. However, this in March 1943, announcing an acquisition of land, reveals the true identity of the metaphorical Burma Road. Two tracts of land were to be required for His Majesty's forces. Tract 1 was west of Oaksfield, and Tract 2 was 2,070 acres near Orange Hill and on the western edge of Burma Road near land belonging to G.R. Baxter and Caves Company Limited. The government notice clearly locates that the road that the Guardian reported is the road known as Blake Road, but perhaps in the mind of local people, Burma Road was a symbol of defiance. Let me read that again. The government notice clearly locates that the road that the Guardian reported is the road known as Blake Road, but perhaps in the mind of local people, Burma Road was a symbol of defiance. So the metaphorical road, Lawler concludes, is Blake Road.
Blake Road.
All right. The other indication that supports Blake Road are two references of meetings at, quote, the guns, close quotes, which may be the guns situated at the Western Esplanade before Fort Charlotte. Mm. The failure of the main industries in the Bahamas led to a general migration to America and from the outer islands to Nassau. So we stick a pin right there. Here's a text. Good day. Where can I get a copy of Lawler's book?
At Lawler's house in general. Give me some time. I can say the number.
Yeah, before the end of the show or during the show, we'll share the contact information.
I'll look for it in the meantime.
Yeah, did Lawler cross the picket line back then? I mean, yeah, that according to Watkins, who was on the scene at the time. Okay, there's another quick excerpt, Mr. Newry, I want to read from Lawler's book.
Let me say that phone number right now. That's 325-3157. That's 325-3157. If you want to call and get a book from Lawler, you have it, pick him up from Addis House.
All right, and we're speaking specifically about his most recent publication, A New History of the Bahamas, but call and ask him if any of his other publications are available for purchase at the house, like the Paradise Island story, Paul Albury, updated by Anne and Jim Lawler, the Harbor Island story, The History of the Bahamas in Pictures, Paul Albury, A Man and His Writings, From Africa to the Bahamas, and The Bahamas, History and Memoir, right? So those are also his books. So now we're going to turn quickly to page 155. A private letter offering a description of the riot was submitted from E. Brownrigg of the Nassau Defense Force to the Ministry of Information. He stated that the native workmen were dissatisfied with their wages of 4 shillings, was of the opinion that the protest would have been peaceful if the better type of workmen had not been accompanied by several hundred of the opposite, type. Your feelings too, right?
Yeah, I got feelings for that.
Yeah, my feelings. The looters were armed with sticks, bottles, and cutlasses and had worked themselves up to a fever pitch and started to destroy everything they could lay their hands on. They broke almost every show window in Bay Street, looted merchandise and stole goods. They smashed the window of the Red Cross headquarters and stole a valuable print and left it in the gutter. 2 or 3 cars were damaged and a Coca-Cola truck looted. There was a delay in reading the riot act, but the police and British soldiers finally restored order at the point of their bayonets. The mob of over 2,000 people made their way to Grantstown, where they burned a police station, a fire engine, an ambulance, and looted 5 bar rooms. They also looted the post office, the library, and the southern branch of Cole's Pharmacy and other stores. Among the stolen goods were drugs, which were impossible to obtain from England. On Friday, the whole force of police and soldiers districts constantly and would be on duty until Monday, leading to extreme tiredness. They had loaded guns and fixed bayonets, and each of the emergency squads were accompanied by trucks with two Tommy guns. Martial law was declared for the whole of New Providence with an 8 p.m. curfew. 40 arrests were made for persons breaking the curfew, which led to either a fine of £1 or 14 days in jail. Stick a pin right there.
Do you know that Nazi involvement was also accused, saying that the Nazi sponsored the Burma Road riot?
That's why your boy had to leave the throne.
Yeah.
I mean, I surmise.
Yeah. They're saying that they said the Nazi presence that the blacks living here at the present time was that not that frustrated, and that Nazi paid them to do a whole Burma Road riot.
Right, back to our earlier point where I think the colonial office said that the wages, the money being made here is so good that the people are not prone to protest, even scandal. Oh boy, I've got so many notes. I think I've got another note about the way the riot as well. It turns out that I think American workers, while the Bahamian workers were being paid 4 shillings a day,
mm-hmm.
they discovered that the American workers were being paid 5 shillings an hour.
Yes.
And then they discovered that it's possible that, Mr. Nui, I want to read directly from the text, right? But it's possible that the Bahamian authorities deterred them. Like the company was prepared to pay the Bahamian workers the same.
Was prepared to pay them the same and also to make an increase, not even necessarily to be equal. And
right.
The government said that, no, it's too much money. And they were concerned that it would have cost, like when there's too much money circling in the economy. And
it would cost
an increase in prices of
right.
supply and demand, whatever you call it. So the government thought it was economics. And if you do this now, it would skew the amount of money in circulating into the Bahamas.
All right, let's go to the text line. Question, didn't Perry Christie rename Blake Road to Burma Road?
No, still Blake Road that I know of. But anything is possible.
Yeah, because you know the way that they make signs.
Yeah, anything is possible.
Because like we had this whole story about the women-led team, the sign team, and they make thousands of signs. We don't... Anyway, y'all keep up the good work, ladies. Here's another text. Man, text away. You send me the text. You can't see we having good reading. We going through history. We having good time. All right. Yesterday I said I wanted to find a quote that suggested that Fox feared that he, like MLK, kind of integrated his people into a burning building.
Okay.
I didn't quite find that, but here's a quote that I did find. From page 181 in Aranas Towards a Democratic Franchise, Suffrage Reform in the 20th Century Bahamas. A little pretext, Henry Taylor, who at the time served as chairman of the PLP, was unsuccessful in his bid for re-election. He was subsequently replaced as party chairman and blamed not only his personal defeat on, quote, dissension and intrigue in the executive hierarchy of the party, close quote.
Well, pause there.
Mm-hmm.
Which party are you talking about?
The PLP, the one he founded.
Now repeat it again.
Henry Taylor, who at the time served as...
Insert the word PLP, though.
As chairman of the PLP, was unsuccessful in his bid for re-election. This is the party he started, right? For re-election. He was subsequently replaced as party chairman and blamed not only his personal defeat on, quote, dissension and in the party, close quotes, but further concluded that this display of disunity caused a decline in the party's mass appeal. His allegations that influential party members had actively sabotaged his re-election bid behind the scenes cannot be corroborated.
Mm.
This monocausal explanation, however, appears to contradict the fact that in 1962, the PLP's candidates had received more votes in total than those of any other single party. Others like Fox, the sole Labour Party candidate whose election bid had been successful, cynically blamed the women who had voted for the first time. He further alleged that through gerrymandering, as a quote from Fox, the minority government had divided the Bahama Islands into electoral districts in such an unnatural and unfair manner so as to give themselves a distinct political advantage. The predominantly white districts such as Abaco and Harbor Island returned 3 representatives, while the more populous areas in the Black Belt were allowed 2 representatives, and in some cases only 1. Paradoxically, we had won the election but lost the country. Mm. Quote, end quote. It is indeed a paradox that in his memoir, first published more than 10 years after the PLP eventually fell from power, Fox portrays himself as having been on the losing side of this election, when in fact, during the campaign, because of personal quarrels with the PLP leadership, he had endorsed the UBP. Furthermore, while it is true that the uneven distribution of seats yielded a result where a party with more votes won fewer seats, and vice versa, this was not the result of active gerrymandering on the part of the UBP. The House of Assembly did not have that power yet.
Mm.
End quote. So it says, producer, let's go to the phone line. It says that he had endorsed the UBP.
Fox was a UBP supporter.
Yeah.
Like many black behemoths.
Yeah, like Roberts.
Like Bradley Roberts.
Yeah. Let's go to the phone line. Good morning, caller.
Yeah, good morning, Ms. Green and Mr. Newey.
Morning, sir.
Yeah, quick in, but I don't know if you mentioned the death threats that surrounded folks received, right?
Oh, no, I didn't.
And the fact that...
No.
And the fact that Martin Luther visited him during his sedition trial.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, man, it's in the book. And so the thing is... You know, he's one of my heroes, along with Tamalo. And so I just wanted to get this in. You said something at the beginning of the show that is correct, but it's also correct that if you don't know your history, it will repeat itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you know it, it will repeat itself. I'm knowing the fact that in the Sahari Oaks book, because Sahari Oaks had love for black people, you know they're repeating the same narrative that the taxi driver called and said that they're telling the cruise passengers not to venture here, not to venture there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the Sahari Oaks book that I read, Blood and Fire, I was going to send you a hardback. If you want to borrow it and read it, I could lend it to you. But what I'm saying is, they mentioned the fact that because we had booming nightclub industries, and Sir Freddie Munnings would be able to call and talk about this, you know, the Yellow Bird and the conch shell and all those, they actually, in the book, he had mentioned that they had actually spread propagandas on the clubs and the black people over the hill saying that the ladies are mad, gonorrhea and all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
There was all type of things from back then to impede financial rewards of the tourism industry. And so even with the nightlife that exists in Nassau now, which is basically non-existent, it shows that it's basically this pathetic after 6 o'clock, man. It's a disgrace, man. They don't want nobody to make the money. Give thanks. Let Freddie Munnings call, man, on the next show, man.
Blessings. Freddie Munnings, please call.
Remember,
maybe on the next side.
He has an appointment with me for when he returns. So we're going to have a discussion.
With Munnings?
With Munnings.
Oh, nice.
Where he will give a narrative of the music industry from, I guess, whatever, the Cat in the Fiddle move forward. And why there was a decline.
Please invite me to that show.
So I could
bring the book by
we got to challenge him though.
Crystal Walks Francis.
Okay.
Right?
So beforehand.
The 3-volume series,
okay.
Right?
No,
so we could use that. What else I want to do? I can spend the time listening to Bahamian music, okay. So I could respond with song lyrics.
Okay.
All my responses on the show.
We might do it on Wednesday then and have a 2-hour show if we have music.
Yeah, man, we could do that.
Okay.
All right. One more quick read before we go. This is from page 113.
I'm enjoying the show, by the way. You can continue. I'm good.
All right. This is from Arana's book, Towards a Democratic Franchise, page 113. During the general strike, Governor O. Rayner Arthur played an ambivalent role when he had scheduled to open the new session of the legislature on the second day of the strike. Picketers booed not only Bay Street politicians, but him too. It may have been this, quote, unprecedented lapse of manners, close quotes, that made him fear not only his own safety, but anticipate more widespread violence, which resulted in Arthur calling forth by colonies to ensure order. Overall, the general strike remained mostly peaceful, but there were isolated incidents of violence. The troops remained in the colony for over 2 years, not least to, quote, placate the nervousness of the white population, close quotes. Politically, he objected to both the PLP, whom he considered left-wing extremists, as well as the UBP, who he described as, quote, rabid white reactionaries, close quotes.
You have to explain right and left-wing. Right means conservative,
mm-hmm.
And
left meaning liberal.
Means liberals.
Yeah.
So who was the conservative party?
The UBP,
yes.
Who he described as rabid white reactionaries.
That doesn't sound like... Make America Great Again?
Does sound a bit This modicum of neutrality, that's like a little poco-poco, a little bit of neutrality perhaps, allowed him to successfully broker a compromise. Quote, providing more equitable transportation to and from Nassau's international airport, close quotes. However, some commentators at least thought that this compromise only addressed the, quote, surface cost of the general strike and amounted to squandering a, quote, golden chance to break the complacency of the Bay Street Boys, close quotes, by appointing a, quote, royal commissioner to expose the root of the explosive unrest, close quotes. This view, however, fails to acknowledge the governor's role in convincing the colonial office that the time had come again to take a more active role in Bahamian affairs and press for additional democratic reform steps. In particular, Arthur took the stance that it was paramount to pass more progressive labor legislation and to implement further electoral reforms before continuing any conversation about constitutional changes toward more responsible government. If the colony attained internal self-government under the current franchise, which in his opinion contained, quote, many obvious anachronisms and deficiencies, close quote, Arthur feared, quote, it might turn the Bahamas into a little South Africa, close quotes. Due to Arthur's insistence, this became the colonial office's stance, too, which considered these reforms urgent. Yeah, end that there. That's the end of that excerpt.
And that was a commentary on apartheid and the fear of apartheid happening to the Bahamas.
Or entrenching itself into a independent, right? Like a more independent nation.
So how did they compromise? They created gated communities. Now that's part of our culture too.
That's something, man. Here's the thing about a gate. It's like, isn't it antithetical? You create a gate, you go into a gated community to like protect yourself and protect your things. But what you end up doing is creating a sign that says, all the good things are in here. That's why we put a gate up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then they plant palm trees.
Yeah.
And then have the epitome of cheeseburger in paradise. And then we want to go across the gate.
And then we want to live in gated
communities. And then we have selected few who goes in behind the gate and say, this is how life is, and we'll keep the rest out.
I want you to know that if I become prime minister...
You're going to establish a gated community?
No, I'm going to close down the Ministry of Tourism.
Oh, man.
Yeah, because they're responsible.
I can't vote for you.
Yeah, man. You don't have to vote for me. It's okay. They're responsible.
What do you mean?
The Ministry of Tourism has done such a wonderful job.
I hope you know it.
They've done such a good job over the decades that they've convinced Bahamians that they are tourists in their own country and they on vacation and somebody else is going to do the job. You know, you go to the play and then you realize the people who's supposed to be putting on the play, who's supposed to be acting in the play, who's supposed to be handling the lights and the sound and the ushering and the concessions and the parking, that they all... hogging up, they all jamming into the door trying to get a seat in the front row while they're supposed to be putting on the plate. Mm-hmm. That's why I would have to get rid of Ministry of Tourism, because they did far too good of a job. They convinced us.
You never shown that.
Absolutely. You've been on the clock with Aaron Green. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for taking time out with me to take a walk back into history. But that's what this season calls for. Labor Day calls for us to remember, to commemorate, to honor the lives of those who put themselves on the line for our freedom.
Will it rain come Friday?
It rains every public holiday. It may not rain hard on the Friday, but it can rain either on the Sunday or the Monday.
I heard there are some people...
pray for rain because of the trees.
For the trees, sir. And for the wildfires.
We pray for rain, but we pray for safekeeping for those who do not have secure accommodations as well.
Yes.
Absolutely. We go into a break because next it's Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Newry. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app. Nassau, Bahamas.